reading of the July 14th Ways and Means to Order. Natalie, I guess, would you mind calling the roll?
I'll do it today.
Perfect. Amber, it is.
Archer. Ronk.
Here.
Bartels.
Here.
Guevara's. Hayes.
Here.
Mayo.
Here.
Walter.
Here.
And Donaldson.
Here.
All right. At this time, I will make, I will accept a motion to approve the meeting minutes of the July 9th, 16th, and 25th and 30th meetings of Ways and Means.
So move it.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We have with us tonight Jamie Capuano and Dr. Alan Roberts from the Ulster County Community College, who are going to be giving us a presentation on the 2021 Ulster County Community College budget.
All right, thank you, Ken. So I'm just going to do share screen. Just bear with me 1 second. Can everybody see this? Everybody's good? Okay,
yes,
thank you, Ken. So just jumping in on our 2021 SUNY Ulster budget. Overall, you know, we're projecting a reduction of expenses by $1.1 million. This is reflective, as you see here, salary and wages are down about $700,000, mostly through attrition. We've also seen an uptick in our benefits. Again, as folks retire, they go on to our retiree health insurance, so we're picking up a little increase on retiree health insurance. The largest area in terms of our budget that we've really re-examined is our contractual relationships. So we have a contractual relationship with our Office for Information Technology. We contract that out with the company through Ellucian. The contract is up for renewal this year, and we really had to renegotiate it to reduce our overall costs. So through that negotiation process, we've reduced our overall cost there by about $600,000, again, resulting in a total net reduction in expenses by $1.1 million. Again, 77% of our budget is salary and benefits. You know, this makes it really difficult when you're trying to reduce your overall budget components to really look through a line-by-line analysis on where you can reduce. So that's why the contractual areas became so important with the upcoming fiscal situation ahead. Just a quick state aid update for current year. We've received notice of a 20% reduction, or about $310,000 reduction in our June payment. The state allocates payments to us on a quarterly basis. This is a 20% reduction on our fourth quarter payment. We will still try to work with the count or work with the state to get that funding. Hopefully that funding comes in before year end. If it doesn't come in before year end, we would certainly book that revenue into next year. But at this point, we are anticipating a 20% reduction. The governor has been out saying 20% reductions across the board. We are tracking this as we go forward into next year, but that is our current year state aid update. On the revenue side of the house, we are expecting a reduction in tuition. This is mainly because our enrollment, we're expecting a reduction in for the upcoming fiscal year. We were surprised to see an uptick in our summer enrollment, so we're hopeful that our enrollment will bounce back for fall and for spring, but again, we needed to project a reduction there based on what we're seeing in the trends. State aid, we're projecting a reduction of about $900,000. That's, again, looking at what's happening statewide, what's happening with the fiscal crisis from the pandemic, and where we think that we'll land by year end. At this point, we have no change in the sponsor's contribution. Again, we're so thankful for that. We are really, you know, one of the few community colleges who have been really supported strongly by the county through all of this. We thank you for all your continued support. We are projecting a slight uptick in charges to other counties. So those are charges for students who come to SUNY Ulster from neighboring counties. We do see an increase there in some of our banner programs, our police basic training, our nursing program, our vet technology program. Those programs really do bring in a lot of students from out of county. We are projecting a slight reduction in other revenue, and we are showing a fund balance withdrawal of about $400,000. So again, on the revenue side, in order for balanced budget, we're reducing revenues by $1.1 million. In terms of tuition, we are proposing a tuition increase. This is a $200 increase for the year, As you see here, this puts us in line with other community colleges in our region. And our total tuition of $4,880 is still below the statewide average of $5,024. Again, with the fiscal uncertainty ahead, we felt it was really prudent to review every line item in our budget this year, reduce expenses where we can, and also reduce our revenue projections for the upcoming fiscal year. We have a new shared services initiative that we're still working on with the county. This will be a shared services for the purchasing, for our purchasing functions. We had two vacancies in our purchasing department, and it was really important for us to look at all of our cost centers and really say, where can we reduce and where can we achieve savings and improve efficiencies? And this option seemed like a win-win, where we can work with the county on purchasing. We won't fill those two vacancies, and we can enter into a shared services agreement with the county. As I said before, we are revisioning our information technology operations. We're going to be partnering with SUNY CECAS and SUNY iTech. These are SUNY arms for information technology. We're going to be hosting our servers with them, and we're going to be really working with them to really revision how we do information technology. This will also get us out of the business of hosting our own servers and will reduce our maintenance costs in the out years for our server maintenance components. Just a quick update on capital projects. Our waterline project is now complete, as is our water tank project. We are in the final stages of doing the hookups, and we hope to have that operational by the fall when we have students back on site. At this point, we're just waiting again for the aqueduct to open, and then we will be tapping into the city water. So we are moving on capital projects. I know the state has put a pause on most capital projects. We are starting to see some capital projects with emergency funding requests going through, but again, the state has paused at this point all contract requests. So with that, I can open up to any questions, any comments. And Dr. L, I don't know if you wanted to jump in with anything additional.
Dr. Al, if you've got anything to add before I open up for questions.
While I was talking, I was on mute. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just going to indicate that this year, again, we are on the top 100 as the most affordable colleges in the mm-hmm. country. And we're the only one on the state. So it may look like we're below the average, but after you have grants and our foundation support, we are the most reasonable in the state. So we're proud of that. And by the way, just thank you for all you do. The water line was incredible. The capital projects, the continued support. It's just means a lot to us when we're going to be looking at some interesting cuts from the state. We just got word about a week ago that they were cutting our Pell payment by 20%, but we have to give the students 100%. So that's one way that the state gave all students a 20% decrease in their tuition. So things like that just are challenging, but we're going to get through them. And we're one of the few institutions who are going to come out of this fine.
Thanks, Doc. Does anybody have any questions? Anybody on the committee? Going once? Going twice?
I have questions.
Okay.
But someone else said it. Tracy, did you want to go first?
Mine's quick, so I'll go first.
Baby, could you stop the screen share, and then I can see actually when people are raising their hand.
Ken, you can manually slide it over as well. If it's okay, can I go first?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Jamie, you mentioned that you're basing the downgrading of enrollment on trends. Are those trends that apply to community colleges as well as four-year colleges, or are you looking at four-year college trends?
Oh, did you get lost?
Yeah, I'm here. Oh. Sorry.
She lost her computer. She just walked into my office.
Okay.
So.
So sorry.
Well, I can answer the question too.
Okay.
We have a matrix that we've been using for years to determine enrollment. It's different than state. We projected to be down about 10%, but right now, as we speak, we're down 25%. So we got a lot of catching up to do. We just advertised our reopening plan, which is going to allow our students to have access to the campus, and it's been approved by the state mm-hmm. and by the county. So we have to hold our breath now. We don't know what'll happen, honestly.
Dr. Roberts, did you just say that you're down 25%? I thought that Jamie said that you were up in the summer enrollment. That's you're down 25 for the fall enrollment at the moment.
Yeah, okay. We're up about 6% for the summer, which was a surprise. We didn't expect that. We're just hoping, keep our fingers crossed, that something might happen in the fall, too.
Okay, thank you.
What happened to your computer?
My internet just came
out. Eve, go ahead.
Thanks. So I have a few questions, and, you know, this is my first rodeo, so I'm sorry if these are repeating questions that have happened in past years, but I'll try to go through them as quickly as I can. Some of them are easy. First, I'm wondering about the charges that we've had to pay to other counties. If you have an idea of how much that is and overall in relation to how much we're getting back, and also to any what efforts have been put into place to try to reduce that, to have as many of the Ulster kids actually staying here in Ulster?
It's a good question, and it's been the topic of discussion for the 5 years I've been here. When you get to Marlborough and you get to Highland and you get to the east part of the county, going over the bridge is a lot easier than coming to SUNY Ulster. We've talked about putting a branch campus in Marlborough. We did something that really is more significant than reaching out a branch. We do something called collegiate. And which is interesting is you got a school like Marlborough, or let's take Highland. Highland graduated 100 seniors last year. When we do collegiate classes, we start teaching college classes when they're a junior and senior in high school. Out of the 20 students who graduated, you know, very bright students, 20 of them completed 1 year at Ulster and never having to come here. Right there is a significant increase that doesn't cost us anything other than just making an agreement with other schools. Probably the best we can do to reach out to that community. And we do reach, and a lot of schools have specialized programs. The reason we like to have a strong sports team is because we draw from other counties some of these sports. The reason we have a fashion design program that nobody else has, we draw from other counties. The vet tech program, we're the only one that has that. We draw from other counties. Our police training program is the only one in the counties. Now, on the flip side of that, they have programs we don't have. So that's where you'll get the pullback.
So can you tell me, I guess the question is, how much are we paying out?
We can get you that information. Yeah, I can pull that.
I can answer that.
Bert's on the line. So Bert.
Yeah, I'm on the line. I can answer that now. Last year, we spent $3.8 million to other community colleges.
Okay. And I guess I just wonder if the consideration, like for $3.8 million, that's if we perhaps provided more free full scholarships for our own students, that maybe we would end up saving way more than the 3.8 that we're sending out. So just a
I mean,
thought.
If I could just jump in, you know, one of the big drivers of the chargeback is FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. FIT statewide, I mean, we've done this at NYSAC together. I believe that the Community College Association has fought very hard for the state legislature to stop characterizing FIT as a community college, or at least only allow a chargeback for their their 2 year programs, because FIT is the only 4 year community college.
That makes sense. And what percentage of those? What percentage goes to FIT of the 3.8 million?
I mean, Bert might have that number, but we can definitely get that for you. It's a large portion.
Oh, sorry. I just looked it up. Last year, we spent $300,000.
Of the $3.8 million.
Right. It was to FIT.
Right. So I guess I just wonder if, again, going down the line, you know, that's a lot of money to pay out, that if we provided grants to kids that were here, might be an incentive. That was just a thought.
I hope I'm not stepping on Dr. Roberts here by saying this as well, but you know, they've done several market research studies about why we actually send out every time, I believe every time, but we've done it at least once. We send a survey to the students who have gone to other colleges. And of course, you only get a small percentage of them back. But when we do get them back, a lot of it is for programs, not because of finances. So without having a program that suits every student, we're not going to be able to recover a lot of these students. I just don't want you to take away from here.
No, that's fine. We could use $3.8 million to start programs. But I'm going to defer to the chair, but I have other questions after.
Chairman Donaldson.
Yes, I mean, what you were talking about, Ken, we do have a survey that they have to take, in other words, when they file that they're going to another college outside. So we do have that. That was a resolution that we put in quite a while ago. I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. I'm not sure. So we do have that information on why they are going. And basically, it's, you know, convenience. It's all based down to convenience. We have attempted to put special programs in line. So this is an issue that the college and I think the legislative body has taken very serious for as long as I've been here, because that's been an issue. You know, Dutchess County, of course, is just on the other side of the river. And if you live in Highland, it's a lot closer to go to Dutchess. At the same time, if you live up in, you know, Saugerties in some cases, or even a little bit north of Saugerties, it's closer to go up to Greene County. So, you know, we have to compete with that, and which we try to keep the rates down. Now, Dutchess has recently increased their rates, but they also have a, you know, large college. It's a large, you know, it's a larger community college, and, you know, it creates a certain attraction in that manner. And so there's a lot of things that the college has been doing and that we as a body have been doing in an attempt to lessen this as much as possible. So I just wanted
Follow up, Bert? Is that $3.8 million more or less than last year, for example, or the year before? Is it going up or is it going down or is it consistently that high?
Was Bert there?
Yeah, it's relatively consistent, but it also is determined by the amount, the rate the colleges charge for each credit as well.
So as that goes up. Okay, I just feel like that amount of money, it's not worth keep trying. My next question is, when I looked at cuts in salaries, it seemed like, or changes in salaries, it seemed like administrative positions were all going up. Including administrative, maintenance, security, those were all increasing, and that the decreases tended to all be in the academic, including nursing, which you said was a big draw. And so I guess I'm wondering about, one, that kind of whether you are putting the, you know, why I'm seeing that, and two, if the tuition ends up being, if you end up getting more students than you are worried, you know, that 20% increases or 25%, are you committed to bringing back those faculty jobs that you're not filling because those students
more
come,
student
they're going to need faculty.
More faculty we have. That's well, the only reason we're here is to serve students. We can get adjuncts, instructors in a heartbeat. So we're ready if we do get that increase, which we're hoping.
Right. So I did see like a lot, I mean, biology, English and language, nursing, they all showed reductions while the administrative departments all showed some increase just in salaries.
So Eva, I can jump in with that. We are currently in contract negotiations with our faculty union. We haven't settled our current year contract for them. We did enter into a one-year MOA with our professional association, and that's where you see the increases in a contractual relationship on that side. While we're hoping to get into negotiations, once we have a better fiscal understanding of the year ahead, then you would see a retro in next year's budget for those positions as we negotiate the contract.
Great. So you're maintaining the faculty.
Correct.
Yeah, we haven't lost any faculty.
Correct.
Perfect. And the last question, if I can. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Eve.
Is that okay? I noticed the child care center, the total salary is about $40,000. how many people is that supporting? It's just sort of interesting because I can like look at the trustee salary and it's a bit higher than the child care center. How many people are supported on that?
Sure. The children's center, we are only covering the director's salary for the children's center. The children's center is run by our association, which is a private 501c3, which is funded by our student activity fees. So the children's center staff are actually funded through a separate budget set forth through our association. So you don't.
And is that a full-time job?
It is a full-time job and they have benefits. Yes.
All right. When was the last time she got a raise?
The director got a raise this year.
This year.
Okay. Just 42 sounds very low for someone who's running a child care center, which I know is really important for many students who go to the community college. And I just, it doesn't seem like it's livable wage, but
what we did is we brought in an independent agency to do an analysis of all salaries, and actually they recommended that she got an increase, and that was the increase on the state average. So we wanted to make sure we were at the same level.
Well, so the whole state is pretty bad at supporting child care. I'm also really glad that you renegotiated with Ellucian. That's was a really, really high amount. It seems like you don't have any on-site IT full-time people, that you just use students.
Right, so we have on-site OIT, but it's all through the Ellucian contract. So the Ellucian contract valued at roughly $1.1 million funds our full IT operation. So we do have on-site IT, but they're all through a contractual relationship with Ellucian. The operating budget in terms of support for staffing, it's only for our student services side where we have some student aides who assist in there. As we transition through this upcoming year, we're hoping to get more on-site SUNY Ulster OIT functioning. And we've been working with other community colleges who seem to have really great models out there on how to get that done.
Could that be another shared services with the county?
We discussed that with the county executive's team. We'll, you know, look through that and try to explore all options as we go ahead.
All right. My work here is done for now.
Thank you.
Good questions, though. Good questions.
Does anybody else have any questions for either Jamie or Dr. Roberts? Heidi? Oh, okay. All right. With that, thank you so much for the presentation. I just do want to commend both Jamie and Dr. Roberts on the way that they handle the community college. And Dr. Roberts in particular, I'm not sure if everybody knows. I know it was discussed at Legislative Programs Committee, and it was well-published on Facebook. But I thought that what you did for the students – getting their diplomas and going around the county and delivering them was really special. I know that friends of mine were one of your stops, and they were just, you know, glowing about how wonderful that was. And in a year when, you know, one of their most crowning achievements was really, you know, had to take a backseat to public health, you were able to make it really special for all of them, and, you know, donned up your cap and gown and went on a road trip. So I just want to personally thank you for that. As you know, as Chairman Donaldson is a graduate of Ulster County Community College, it made me really proud.
Well, thank you for the kind words. It was the most meaningful thing I've done in 35 years of education. It really was really special for me as much as them. So thanks. I appreciate the acknowledgement.
All right. Thank you very much again. With that, we're going to move to resolutions. We're going to start with Resolution 191, establishing a policy for funding of non-county organizations. I'm going to ask that somebody make a motion to postpone this until next week.
I'll make that motion. This is Tracy Park, second.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 196 and 208. What's the committee's pleasure? I know that Legislator Archer had a lot of questions about this. I'm comfortable postponing them until next week if everybody else is. Legislator Bartels?
I spoke with Legislator Archer today, and I believe she had a conversation with Deputy Executive Ryder. Is that correct? Deputy Executive
Ryder?
Yeah, and she conveyed to me that she was comfortable. We appreciate all the information and the acknowledgement, and I think we can move ahead with it.
All right. Do you want to take 191 and 196 and 208 as a block?
I'll move that.
Second.
Was 196 amended to the correct value?
I believe it's correct, yes.
Legislator Bartels?
I sense some hesitation on the part of our financial analyst. Do you... Can I ask Amber if the numbers that you're seeing don't appear correct?
The contract total is listed as $791,503, and I believe the correct contract total is $696,148.26.
I thought that was taken care of last month, but why don't we just postpone them until next week and I can take a look at it?
It can be amended right now to say the correct value.
What's the pleasure of the committee? Legislator Bartels?
If Deputy Executive Ryder is comfortable with waiting a week, I mean, I think we can postpone it the week then and just get the numbers correct, confirm through both departments that they're accurate.
Okay. So at this point, I'll entertain a motion to postpone resolutions 196 and 208.
I'll make that motion.
Second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 233. I'm not going to be like a legislator Archer. I'm not going to wait until the entire heading is read on each one of these. Otherwise, we're not going to get through the meeting in time to have our public hearings remotely on time. So as I read the number, if someone wants to make a motion, I'm fine with that. Resolution 233.
I'll make a motion.
A second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Resolution 235 is confirming the appointment of Lauren Sheely as the director of the Public Defender's Office. I'll entertain a motion for discussion.
I'll entertain that.
Moved by Legislator Donaldson.
Second. I'll second it. Haynes.
Seconded by Haynes. I want to remind everybody that, as was said at Law Enforcement Committee, the proper action by this committee, regardless of how you feel about the appointment, is to pass it tonight out of committee to move it to the floor in order to have a positive or negative vote by the legislature. Otherwise, it becomes a default appointment. With that, Lauren Sheely is with us tonight. I have offered her a couple of minutes just sort of as an opening statement, you know, 3 to 5 minutes tops. And then after that, we'll take questions. She takes questions, I would ask that the committee be respectful and allow her to answer the question completely without being interrupted. If you have follow-ups, wait until the end and I'll call back on you again. With that, Ms. Sheely, if you'd like to begin.
Thank you, Legislator Ronk. And thank you to everyone here tonight for giving me the time and consideration tonight with regard to my appointment as Ulster County Public Defender. You know, I have lots of versions of intros and things I want to tell you all, but I really wanted to take a moment to address the statements that came out yesterday by Legislative Chairperson Donaldson regarding my qualifications. I thought it was very important for me to speak to that briefly tonight. Unfortunately, as a young female attorney, I am all too familiar with my qualifications being called into question. However, please let me be clear. I am more than qualified for this position. From the New York State Defenders Association to the Office for Indigent Legal Services, I meet the criteria and beyond. Now more than ever, the ability to provide high quality legal services to people facing the loss of life, liberty, freedom, or family is crucial. I have spent the past 10 years of my career and my life fighting for the rights of underserved and indigent people and communities. From physically shielding my clients from the opposition in open court, to advocating for justice for the LGBTQ+ community, and to working with children who, immigrant children who have fled their home countries under the fear or threat of violence. I have devoted my career to serving the neediest client populations, and I would like to continue doing this. I want to bring my leadership, my passion, and my vision to the Public Defender's Office, where I know I can be an agent of change during a time when the people are demanding justice and equality. Like I said, I have, you know, a lengthier sort of introduction or speech I could go into, but I want to be respectful of your time. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to make a statement, and I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Chairman Donaldson.
Yes. Am I unmuted? Okay. Thank you. Just for a point of information, I don't think anybody called in your qualifications because you were a female. It had nothing to do with it whatsoever. I just want to make that clear. And the qualifications that were put in place in Ulster County are qualifications that are in place in virtually most places across the county. I don't know. Well, actually, let me ask you a question. Do you know of any county that in New York State that has a public defender? In other words, the chief defense attorney that has had no criminal law experience? Do you know?
I haven't done a study of public defender offices throughout the state. I would say that I go back to and stand behind my position that I am qualified for the position. I have significant family court experience. I have an understanding of criminal law. I am up to date on, you know, recent changes and activities, and I have led a successful free legal services grant-driven office.
John,
I would like to address that question because I did do a little bit of that study. Just as a point of fact, New York City's public defender has no criminal background. Janet Sable, who ran the civil rights division for the Attorney General's office for several years, is entirely immigration and civil background. She is now the lawyer in chief for the Legal Aid Society of New York, which is the primary indigent defense counsel agency for the city.
Right, but that's also the New York City has several departments within the public the public defenders.
That's the private.
So anyway,
Dave, you got another question?
Yes, I do. So, do you know how many actual criminal cases were brought into the public defender's office?
I can try to find those numbers for you.
I could give them to you. New felonies last year was 379. New parole violation matters were 116. These are new. Misdemeanors and violations, 3,242. And family court matters were 567. Can I ask you a question on what have you done in family court? Did you represent somebody that abused or was accused of abusing someone or... accused of...
Instead of doing that, Dave, why don't we just say, what's your experience in family court?
Well, I'm asking you, I think, can I ask the question, or do you want to ask it for me, Ken?
Well, I mean, we can, you can ask each individual.
I mean, I'm asking if that's what she has done, or if she's done something else. I don't know.
Over my 10 years at Free Legal Services Providers, I have provided direct representation in family court to, in various types of matters. And I have supervised a, unit at legal, as attorney in charge at Legal Services of the Hudson Valley of 4 family court staff people. So that, that required heavy supervision and second chairing in all of their cases and matters. In family court. The types of cases we handled were family offense cases as well as custody cases. We did not handle support matters unless they were a crime victim. And I believe that answers your question.
All right, so if you didn't represent somebody that was charged for an abuse or something of that nature, it was basically custodial arguments, I guess, maybe? Is that what you handled?
Well, I mean, I can't exactly remember, but I know that I've represented and supervised the representation of people in family offense petitions.
And just for a point of information with what John Milgram brought out, the New York City has several departments within the public defender's office and hundreds of an attorney. So it's a little different than a hands-on. So now I'd like to just make some type of a quick statement, and then I'll let somebody else ask some questions about the criminal defense experience. I actually called Lou Klein. I think everybody know Lou Klein. Lou Klein was the chairman of the legislature in 1979. When the legislature established a policy of 5 years practicing and 3 years trial in a criminal law. And when I talked to him in reference to that, his concern was that sometimes people get put up that are not necessarily qualified for the position, and they wanted to make sure that there were very base qualifications of 5 years of experience in criminal law and 3 years as practicing the same in trials. And when I talked to him, he said he was concerned about that because, you know, the old system, you know, it seemed to be, buddy or, brother or drinking partner or whatever. They can still maybe get the job, but at least they have to have 5 years of criminal law experience. And then in 2006, the legislature then was ready to hire a public defender, and we went through extensive interviews with many attorneys and actually got questions from the community in some cases, and they went through this, and various attorneys were interviewed, and in the end, one person got that particular job. That same person later on was hired by Mike Hine when he came into office because it changed the process of picking them. My concern here is we're going backwards. We have an opportunity, and we're not using the opportunity properly. And I have no, I think, Lauren Shealy, you're a wonderful human being. You've done great work during your time. I just feel that you're not qualified for this position at this point. And I also have I could point out some other things that were said the last time that were not necessarily true, but I don't want to go into that unless pressed, I guess. So
I'd prefer not to at this point, Dave. We will have the opportunity to make statements like that on the floor.
No,
before Mark, unless you have something that is pressing right now, I want to see if there's any other legislators that have a question.
Yeah, it was directly on what Legislator Donaldson just said. When the charter was created, descriptions and qualifications were reviewed by the Charter Commission, and what was put forward in the charter was determined by that body as the relevant at the time. That 1979 policy, whatever Chairman Donaldson is referring to, was not carried over. So,
can I straighten something out here? The charter was done as a base. We're the ones that make the decision on this in the end. And like I said, the decision back then was 1979. Way back in 1979, they had the forward-thinking idea, I guess, because everybody else actually accepted that afterwards, except for New York City with this giant public defender's office that has various departments within it. So it is totally different. They're never going to, that public defender is never going to be in a courtroom probably at all because of the size of that. So when these were put into 5 years and three, they were put in for meant to continue. And the charter merely points out a base on which you should be working from. And as I said, I'd like to know, other than New York City with this huge one, I'd like to know where else they would. I don't think there is any. But that's having, so that's my point with the charter. The charter is just giving you a base. It's not giving you the total. And these came from personnel department. This wasn't picked up by any time. It came from the personnel department. And in fact, the assistant public defender would require certain qualifications that are not in the resume here.
If I could just clarify that it's the appointing authority that creates minimum qualifications. It's not the legislature. It's the appointing authority, who in this case is the county executive. We advertised the position with a certain set of criteria, which was different. And I just want to make that point. And also just to add, I know you've harped on New York City, Monroe County, and also oils. Both those requirements are different than what our current requirements are.
Also read what oils says and Monroe County says. Read through it. Don't read the first paragraph. Read through the entire document that was actually sent to me.
You both made your points. You're not going to agree on that.
And the problem is, Ken, this is a hearing between us and a question that we're having. And I find it a little troublesome that they have to have somebody in the background on each one of these jumping in all the time. So,
well, if Mark hadn't brought up Monroe County, I was going to, or Heidi was going to, I believe, Dave. So, I mean, you know, you can cast aspersions over my...
What about Monroe County?
Their requirements, they do not require the criminal law. It says criminal or family law, Dave.
But they do have somebody that is.
But their requirements don't. What you've said is just patently untrue, which is that everybody else requires criminal law background, which isn't true.
The legislative body does.
Our legislative body does not. You know, we passed a charter and then the voters passed a charter. And I don't believe that 1979 document survives the charter, and neither does my minority counsel. And without speaking for him, I don't believe the county attorney does either. So, you know, that having been said, I mean, you know, the county charter and the code have three requirements of the public defender as being appointed by the county executive. They have to be an attorney admitted to the bar in the state of New York. They have to reside in Ulster County, and it has to be a full-time position.
We can set whatever criteria we wish.
And we haven't.
Well, we have.
Legislator Walter.
I think actually Legislator Gavaris might be before me.
Oh, sorry. He's on the other screen. Legislator Gavaris.
He's muted.
He's not showing up on video. So, Legislator Walter? Okay.
Sure. I mean, personally, what's more important to me is not whether it's even written, these qualifications, but actually the needs of the indigent population in the county. I really appreciate the work that you have done, Lauren, in terms of serving these people, a lot of the similar population in other ways. I just feel there was a couple of things that were mentioned in law enforcement that I didn't really have a chance to explore, and I did since then, and I just want some clarification because, you know, it was suggested that the majority of the work is family court, but from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's only two full-time family court public defenders and two part-time. There are seven criminal public defenders and seven part-time, which suggests, and in my asking around, the preponderance of the work is in criminal court. And so I guess I wonder, given that the majority of the work is in criminal court, where you feel your words were that you are more than qualified can you just sort of address how you're more than qualified, given the fact that the majority of the work that comes out of this office is criminal court?
Criminal cases? Sure. So I also, the breakdown that I have is for full-time staff, there's about 8 criminal and 4 family, and for part-time, there's 9 criminal and 3 family. So I think it's a higher number all around. But that being said, I believe that the numbers we were most interested in speaking about, you know, trial and court experience was the fact that family court had completed 169 trials, and the criminal total criminal trials was 20. So that number, those figures were significant to us.
Who's us? I'm sorry.
Me.
Okay. Because I get, so you're saying that, I mean, that the effort and work and attention that goes into a case for family court is as time consuming and demanding as a criminal trial court case? I mean, to me, and I'm criminological epidemiologist, so I've been studying this, it's like comparing apples and oranges. They're not the same thing in terms of counts of trial. Plus, you have, you have all the pretrial stuff, all the stuff that happens before, and often plea bargains that happen. So I guess I'm just, isn't the fact that there are just so many more criminal public defenders than family court public defenders, even if my numbers are wrong, there's so many more, isn't that likely because the most of what they do is criminal cases, and most of what they spend their time on a day-to-day basis is criminal cases?
Well, in speaking to your point about trials, I mean, I believe preparing for any trial is as important, you know. Every trial is like critical and extremely important. So I would never say that the family court trials aren't as important as the criminal.
Oh, please don't think I said they're not important.
I just want to make it clear.
You're right. Finish your answer
at the beginning of the meeting. I'd appreciate it if you did that. I don't want to have to start muting people, but I will if it gets out of control. I don't want this to be a fight.
It's fine. I just don't want her to suggest I think they're not important because I didn't say that word.
I'm sorry, difficult. I think that they are just as difficult as criminal trials. I mean, you are talking about potentially losing your children as a generalized statement. I mean, these are serious trials as well. That being said, I am a competent, experienced attorney of 13 years. Not only have I served the community, you know, the indigent community for 10 years, but I have extensive case handling experience and litigation experience myself. And I have led an office of staff. I grew my staff I tripled it from starting at 4 people. I don't think the parts of this job of administering a large grant-driven office can be overlooked. There are extremely competent criminal attorneys in that office, and I would use my knowledge and my experience, and I would leverage the team, and I would lead that office with, you know, compassion and inspiration. I mean, I'm sorry, I forget the origin of your question. I apologize.
I was asking how you're more than qualified given the fact that the preponderance of cases are in criminal cases.
Right.
Preponderance of time is on criminal cases.
Right. I would say that I'm more than qualified in that I am qualified and experienced in leading a large office like this. In leveraging the team of experienced and practiced, you know, with hundreds of years of practice under one roof. I am experienced in, you know, bringing people together and motivating people to do the best job possible. I'm experienced in in supervising attorneys in order to make sure that the highest quality services are being delivered. I'm experienced in, you know, all of the other things along with administering and supervising and providing justice to this clientele.
I'd like to jump in for a question, and then I'll call back on you, Dave, unless I see anybody else's hands up beforehand. I'm the chair, so John, I'm inexperienced at this in a while. A question to John Milgram and Mark Ryder: are you aware of how many cases, criminal cases, last year? The former public defender was counsel of record on?
Two.
You mean in the public defender's office, correct?
That's in the public defender's office. Yes, in the public defender's office, correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me make it clear. I believe it was something like nine. He averaged two a year. It was like nine for the last 10 years. A little under two a year were cases of record under the public defender.
Okay. The other point that I'll make is, I've been in the legislature for the entirety of the charter, and I don't ever remember somebody casting doubt on the former public defender's qualifications in family law or overseeing attorneys that work in family court. So, again, you've got an office that has a broad brush of cases. And I just want to make that point that, I don't believe that the former, and no one's been able to tell me that otherwise, that the former public defender had experience in family court. John Gavaris, did you have a question earlier? No? Okay. Anybody else who hasn't spoken yet before I go to Dave? Legislator Bartels.
I just had a quick question of clarification for John Milgram, who just said that the public defender, the previous public defender, was the attorney of record on two cases last year. As a public defender, are you talking about trial cases, or does that apply to all cases?
Cases assigned to him.
Cases assigned to him.
That's according to Peggy Wolf.
According to who?
Peggy Wolf, at the public defender's office.
I don't think that's right.
Yeah, I don't think that's probably not a measure of the work he did on all cases that he didn't take as a lead assignment, but I just wanted to clarify that you're saying there were two cases assigned to him last year, 2019.
An average of two cases a year for the past 10 years.
And how many cases did he work on overall?
Dave was next, unless Tracy had another.
I did have a question for Lauren of clarification, if that's okay. And that was, at your previous employment, how many attorneys did you supervise?
We got up to 12 total staff members, and that grew from four. I think that four of them were administrative staff.
Forward. And were the others all full-time?
Yes, all full-time, everyone.
Everyone, okay. So four.
Yeah, there was no part-time permitted.
And eight attorneys. And what was the caseload like annually?
Unlike the public defenders, or there was no caseload regulation. That was my job to watch, through regular case reviews and meetings with the attorneys. You sort of determine and gauge where their caseloads are at. Some cases would be active trials, and others, like with a social security attorney, some cases may sit on their case list for a bit longer. So it was within my I was charged with sort of over protecting the attorneys to make sure that no one had too many to do a good job. Luckily, at the public defender's office, that's one of the greatest initiatives of the state funding, is to control the caseloads and bring in more funding so that you can have more attorneys to do more work and spread the work out evenly. So there's no problems, and that they're delivering the highest quality services.
So do you know how many trials you oversaw or you the team undertook annually?
Oh, I'm sorry. How many trials I oversaw? I mean, I could get that number for you, but I'd say annually each of my attorneys handled at least 100 cases.
Which might not be, might not go to trial, but 100 cases.
Per attorney, yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're going to have to recess in a moment and come back later because we're approaching the public hearing. Vicki, if you want to just pipe in, how what time is the first public hearing?
6:15.
All right.
It's 6:15, and there are already speakers signed up.
Yeah, I would say one more question from Dave, and then let's recess until after the public hearing.
All right, well, I just want to, first I want to clear something up. Basically, there is 8 times the amount of criminal cases than there is that go into family court. It's almost 4,000 of that.
Point of information, Dave, are you including like speeding tickets in justice court?
Any misdemeanor, yes. Anything that gets filed with the public defender's office, somebody that gets filed through them, and that's basically almost 4,000.
Yeah, I'm asking if that includes violations, Dave. You said misdemeanors. Does that include violations in justice court?
Misdemeanors and violations, felonies, all that. But anyway, I want to also make sure that you also understand that the public defender normally did not often put his name on the cases. He may have consulted on the cases. That doesn't mean he wasn't involved in the cases. So the idea that he actually only had 2 cases is not necessarily true. But I have to ask one question before we go. Lauren, you said that you were more qualified than what was needed, more or less. But you're going to be overseeing people who are actually having the experience. Well, you said that you're going to leverage. Don't you see a problem with that within that, with the morale or the group that has had, like, I mean, there's people there that have tried murder trials in New York City. There's been people there that have worked in that office for 30 years and actually the three, and another one who was actually a town court justice was, and she does in family court and also criminal law. And by the way, they're all women, so just so you know, as your point of information before, that you feel that your qualifications were overlooked because of that. I certainly am not overlooking anybody's qualifications for that. So don't you see that there may be a morale problem that you might have to fix?
Okay, so the question is,
I could read it again.
Do I think that there will be a morale problem if I'm hired as public defender?
Well, because you're going to be overseeing people that have more qualifications than you do.
Right. I mean, I believe there are people there with more qualifications than me in one area and less qualifications than me in another. I believe I come from a diverse and strong and knowledgeable and experienced background, and I can bring things to that office that no one else has. I have an experience and a background that no one else in this community has. And I believe that with compassionate leadership and, you know, listening to my staff and hearing what they have to say and their suggestions, I believe that I would foster an environment of nourishment. And that would be my goal. I've overseen an office of attorneys with an assortment of qualifications. Some had, you know, many more than me in some areas, and some had many less. I mean, there was varying levels of qualifications. And I believe that I truly inspired and led my team, and I know that they would all tell you that. Being part of a collaborative team where I can elicit information or feedback, or they feel like they can come and speak to me about a suggestion or a problem or anything like that. I pride myself on creating that environment and being, you know, a compassionate and inspirational leader. And also, you know, being in the community and having the same approach to the community and listening to people and the clients and their families and using that information, being the client's voices in this critical time in our country and our county.
I have one last question, if you don't mind, Ken.
Hold on one sec, Dave. Are there going to be other questions afterwards? Because if so, I want to see if Ms. Shealy is able to stay until after, is able to come back after the public hearing. If not, we won't need her to. So, committee members, just pipe up right now if you're going to have a question after the public hearing. Hearing none, Dave, final question.
Yes, due to the fact that they are, public defender's offices, it has very limited resources in many ways, and there's going to be people coming to you possibly. Are we, for instance, dealing with, maybe we need to have a blood splatter expert come in, or, you know, do DNA testing, or expert witnesses, mm-hmm. and you may end up having three of them wanting to do that. How are you going to weigh which one you're going to do and which one you're going to say no at? I mean, that's a critical criminal defense type of question that you don't have the experience with. So I'm wondering how you're going to get to that. I mean, how would you weigh one person's over another, and how would you make sure that one's argument is better and one has to be done and one doesn't?
Well, I think my understanding from meeting with multiple staff in the public defender's office is the state funding that comes through the Office for Indigent Legal Services actually covers those costs. So I don't believe that we're going to have to be making decisions like that. However, I would consult with the team. I would see how it was handled. I would see how we can come to those decisions as a group of competent, knowledgeable attorneys.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Dave. Mark, you look like you want to say one thing. Okay. With that, I think that we should, I'm going to say we're going to take a recess until after the public hearing. Thank you very much, Ms. Shealy, for coming.
Thank you very much for your time.
And we'll come back and finish resolutions after the public hearing. Everyone is just going to have to click back into the same link, correct, Vic? Yes. So after the public hearing is adjourned, everyone go back into the Ways and Means link and we'll finish the resolutions.
You lost Mary Beth. Mary Beth's not coming back.
Dave?
I'd like to clear something up that took place, and it's not a question or anything, but I had Andy Kossover contacted, and he basically said that John Milgram's representation of his caseload was insane and totally false. He handled many, many cases as a public defender in Ulster County Court, town courts, even as a conflict defender in Dutchess County Court on behalf of the public defender's office. I wanted to make sure that they understood the other point of that conversation, and that's about it. Thank you.
You got it. So Resolution 235 has been moved and seconded. All those in favor of moving it to the floor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Moves to the floor unanimously. Resolution 236. Budget modification after adoption. Onto the motion.
I'll move it for discussion.
Moved by Bartel. Second.
Second.
Donaldson. On the resolution. Is there any discussion? Trace, did you have discussion or no?
No, I was just scratching my face. Sorry.
Do any legislators have any discussion on this at this time? Deputy County Executive Ryder?
I just want to make a point on this, and I understand where I think this is coming from, but if Bert was here, he would tell you that he uses budget transfers from payroll as a last resort, and it doesn't happen very often. What I'll say is, in a year like this year, when we're struggling through a pandemic, tying our hands in any way to be able to move money from payroll into paying expenses, like even purchasing resources like N95 masks, I just feel like now is not the time to do this. That's my only point.
Resolution sets a public hearing. Is there any more discussion? All in favor, say aye. Opposed? Nobody opposed. The resolution passes. Resolution 238 is a policy regarding legislative access to Ulster County's munis. I'll entertain a motion for discussion.
I'll move it for discussion.
Moved by Bartel, second by Donaldson. I just want to make sure, one second, Legislator Bartels, and I'll call on you. I just wanted to make sure everybody got the memo and was able to review it from Commissioner of Finance Golnick today on this topic. Legislator Bartels.
I spoke with Legislator Archer earlier, and this is her resolution. She respectfully asked that we postpone it for a week so that she could be here for the discussion. And then also in light of the late memo from the Commissioner of Finance, it'll give everyone time to digest that, and then she'll be present for the conversation.
I make a motion to postpone it for the week.
I just did that.
I'll second.
All right, so,
all right. I didn't know if you did that.
Oh, maybe I didn't, Dave. Sorry. Thank you.
You asked to do it, so that's why I wasn't sure. So
thank you.
If you just did it, I seconded it.
I think I didn't. I think I just thought I did.
That's all good.
That's okay.
All in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, postponed until next week. Resolution 239 is a public hearing on the law to clarify the change orders and amendments to contracts equal to or exceeding $50,000.
I'll move it.
I'll second the motion.
Moved by Walter, second by Donaldson. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, that passes unanimously as well. 240 is requesting the New York State Legislature introduce and the governor sign a transfer tax for Ulster County. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Mr. Bartels?
I was just wondering if the sponsor could give, you know, a little background on this.
Yes, we can talk about the transfer tax, it's basically right now there is the towns and the cities all have these types of in line, and we're basically the bag man. In a sense, so as a result, a number of counties have actually done this. It's a small amount that was put together. I think we should have some discussions on the numbers and the amounts. I thought that that's may be done. I don't know if you want to get more involved in that, but it is a public hearing, so we could actually hear about that and then get ready to discuss these things in more length.
Legislative Bartels.
So, rather than it being a public hearing, right, it's a home rule request. So we would have to, if the request were granted, we would have to actually vote on adopting it. So
yeah.
I'll support the home rule request, and I'm sure we'll have more conversations between now and
right.
then.
Exactly. Well, you're exactly right. We have to start the process to get the home rule request. And once we get the home rule request, we still don't have to do it. I mean, that'd be up to us on how we go about doing it. But I think it's an opportunity that, you know, we have ignored over a long period of time.
I'm just going to weigh in unless somebody else has a comment on it to start with. You know, I'm going to be opposed to this tonight. I don't think that we should be requesting the authority to levy a transfer tax. You know, again, we already have, you know, every time someone buys a piece of property that has a mortgage attached to it, there's a mortgage tax. Anytime somebody refinances their mortgage, there's a mortgage tax. I just think that, you know, that is the best point at which to tax the transfer of real property is at the front end with a mortgage tax. I don't think that you should be taxing both ends of the same transaction. You know, everyone pays them, you know, shouldn't say everyone, everyone who takes out a mortgage, which is the vast majority of people who are buying a home, are getting taxed by the government at the front end when they buy the house. And now when they sell the house, these seniors that may have to sell their house, you know, in order to, you know, be able to move into someplace smaller, or, you know, people who have to sell their house for any host of reasons are now going to get taxed by the government on the way out as well. I can't support it. I think that it's I understand it's an easy money grab. But I don't think that it's something that we should do.
All right. I'm sorry. I was ready to call. Legislator Walters, that's up to you.
I didn't see her until just now, Legislator Walter.
No, I'm sorry.
Just for clarification, is this a tax on the buyer, correct? Not the seller? Sure. Or am I getting this wrong? Seller pays the tax?
The seller pays a transfer tax. The buyer pays a mortgage tax.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted clarification.
Yeah, it's what's the number we have in there again?
Isn't it two?
$1 per 500, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a
state has two for 500 currently, I believe.
Okay.
Legislator Gavaris?
I got a question, but I don't know if anybody knows the answer. Is there a way to do this where if you owned it for a certain period of time, you don't pay this amount, and if you own it beyond that, then you do? Is there a way to structure it that way, or no? It's all or nothing.
I believe there is. It's a little tricky, but I believe there may be. I'm not, you know, that's something that we would have to actually zero in on and look at, but it, like Ken pointed out, it is the seller that's paying for that, so it's coming out of that. It's not.
Legislator Bartels?
Well,
sorry, John.
I'm sorry. I want to finish my point on that. So if a person is doing flipping houses as a business, then to me that's different. Then I think I wouldn't mind necessarily taxing them. I don't want to. I'm with Legislator Ronk on the idea that I don't want to tax people who are selling their home, who've lived in it for 30 years, and they're going to a retirement home now. But I do think if people are doing this as a business, I wouldn't mind taxing them for it.
Well, there may be a number, too, you can work on. But rather than that, I mean, because sometimes, you know, you might be selling your house and you're making $1 million, even though you owned it for quite a while, but the tax is not as significant as you know, many other aspects of buying and selling the house. I think Evelyn had a question, or Evelyn was going to make a statement.
Yeah, but I'm letting legislators go first, and then after the legislators are done, then I'm going to allow the county executive's office to weigh in.
Gotcha.
Legislator Bartels?
Thank you. Yeah, I like Legislator Gavaris's suggestion. I don't know if it's something that would have to be in the home rule request. I mean, I also think, even if you were to make a significant amount of money on the property, if you've been in the house for, as Legislator Guevara said, 30, 40 years, for a lot of these people, that is their equity. They, you know, they may or may not have a 401k or retirement. I certainly know those people personally. I'm sure we all do, our district. So I don't know, Dave, if it would be something that we would have to put in the home rule request. And I don't know if timing is critical in terms of Could we wait? Could we even wait the week to try to look into it?
Well, actually, where is Magucci? I think he's there, right, Chris?
Right here.
Yeah, because I believe a home rule request gives you the blanket, and then you are allowed to adjust that. However, in other words, you can't add more, but you can adjust downward on it or change, in other words, the specifics. And I actually also like John Gavaris's ideas on this. But, Chris, can you clear that up, or if you don't mind?
Sure. The home rule request, I believe, is drafted is definitely gives the legislature certain flexibility as long as it's passed as written by the state. I think either of the suggestions that we discussed, the home rule authority, if it's granted.
Did Nick want to weigh in on that, Ken?
Yeah, can I be heard?
Please. Yep.
Yeah, no, my suggestion would be that if you want to have the ability to legislate, you should include the terms of what you intend to put into the local law in your request for home rule authority, particularly in these area of taxation. If you look at the section of tax law where other localities are authorized to do this, we're just seeking to have Ulster County added on to where other counties have already or localities have opted into this. Taxing authority is prescribed by the state, so I would not assume that you're going to have the ability to do whatever you want after the fact. I would build it in up front.
Any other legislators want to speak?
Did Chris concur with that?
I mean, I'm of course happy to work with minority counsel on this. I happen to hold it slightly different. I mean, I think we have some flexibility here, the way it's drafted presently. But again, I don't think there's any problem with coming up with some additional language if that would be the wishes of the body.
Okay.
Evelyn?
Thanks, Legislator Ronk. From the county executive's office, it's frequently expressed in legislative meetings and particularly in this committee, some dismay at the county executive introducing things or taking actions without consulting with the legislature first. So we were a little shocked to see, to find out about a new tax being introduced on Ulster County residents by reading the resolutions that came out on Thursday evening, right before a holiday weekend. Ordinarily we would think when introducing a new tax, we'd like to do some analysis in terms of how much money it might collect, who's going to be paying it, who the burden falls on, some of the design features that Legislator Gavaris was talking about in terms of thresholds or criteria that might change how regressive or progressive the tax is, as well as how much revenue might be collected from it. And from the comments here, it's sounding like other members of the committee are also just starting to dig into this for the first time. From our view, this is just a breathtakingly casual way to introduce a new tax. And we'd really love to take a step back and see some analysis and some real design work done before going ahead with something like this.
Legislator Donaldson.
Yeah, this is the legislative function, by the way, in case you didn't know that. The thing is in this case, I didn't really expect it to go any further than right. I mean, we're having a conversation. I expected to get the introduction in and move forward. But so I'm actually surprised that, people were even thinking about moving it that quick. I mean, I wanted to get the process moving, and in order to do that, you have to put a resolution in. So that's what is going on here. And so I would suggest that, we postpone it anyway. But, I mean, I was hoping that we'd have, a deeper conversation on this. But we got caught up in other things. So, but I would like to have it move kind of quickly if we could, because there's, I think there's a significant amount of money that could be brought in and without, hurting somebody too much. with the seller. But I agree with Gavaris, and I think that's part of the conversation that we should be having.
Is that a motion to postpone for a month, Legislator Donaldson?
Yeah, I have no problem. I postponed it. I think we need to talk about this item.
Unless Tracy would like it postponed until the next meeting.
I think we can postpone it again.
I would like to have it postponed, but I mean, I think this is something that we should have a meeting on just this. You know, and sit down and actually hammer this thing out, because I think it's an important aspect that, and with the budget crisis that we're going to be facing, I'm sorry if I tried to offer something to bring in some money.
Legislator Walter.
Thanks. I just, wherever the postponement is, just for clarification of what will happen between now and then. So the one thing I hear is whether the language of this particular resolution needs to get to the specifics, or whether it can be written more broadly and the specifics can be hammered out later. Is that, that sounds like one of the things we need clarification, because the councils don't fully agree.
Yes.
Can we just be clear if there's anything else that we're hoping to achieve so we can have everything in front of us by the next, whenever it is?
If you don't mind, Ken?
Please, Dave.
Yeah, I think we need to clear all of them up. That's why I would like to have a meeting with just, the committee to discuss just this particular item. When I put it in, I didn't have any idea that it would, probably because of the Zoom type meetings, it's, really changed the nature of things a little bit. But I think this is something that should be dealt with individually, because I think it's going to take a little time to hammer out exactly what's the way we want this to go forward. Because probably, even though Chris said we could probably change those, I mean, there's flexibility in those. I think it might not be a bad idea to, even if we don't have to, still have what we are looking for as the best way to move forward on that, like John Gavaris's idea. And then I'm sure there's other people that have ideas.
Agreed. Legislator Bartels.
And I also suggest when we're wondering what we should be looking at, can we get the numbers of what, without any restrictions on it, of what revenue it would have brought in,
yep.
However we want to do that in the last quarter. And
I
maybe
think I'm going to give it a split. I'm going to see if March would take that assignment or not. March, will you?
Absolutely, and I'd be happy to send our report on both mortgage reporting tax, real estate transfer tax that we just released a few weeks ago, and I'll pass it along to Vicki to send out to everybody. It has revenue estimates in there.
Thank you, March, and then we'll have her in part of the conversation, obviously.
Any other discussion? Motion to postpone until the next meeting?
So moved.
Moved by Bartels, second by Gavaris. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. 241, confirming the appointment of Wanda Williams to the Off-Track Betting Corporation Board of Directors. Moved by?
Move it.
Moved by Donaldson, second. Walter? Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 244, approving the 2020-2021 Ulster County budget. Ulster County Community College budget.
Move it.
Moved by Donaldson.
1 second.
Second by Haynes. On the resolution, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 245, amending the 2020 Ulster County budget to accept increased funding for minimum wage and workforce COLAs from the New York State Office of Addiction Services. Moved.
Move it.
By Donaldson, second.
Second, Haynes.
Haynes. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Resolution 248, authorizing the chair to execute a contract with DCJS for Raise the Age probation. Moved by Donaldson. Second by Haynes.
Haynes.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 249, amending the 2020 county budget to adjust the annual salary of the public defender in order to be consistent with a full-time position. Move for discussion. Donaldson, second. Bartels, Legislator Bartels.
I'd like to ask that we just postpone this a week. You know, over the last couple meetings, I brought this up in law enforcement. I just haven't gotten the language. I have no issue. It's not with the resolved or the number, but I would like to make a couple changes in the whereases, and I'll have that suggestion in writing for next week if the committee would allow me the.
Move to postpone next week. Motion to postpone made by Bartels, second by Donaldson. On the postponement?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, we'll deal with that next week. Resolution 251, authorizing the chair to execute a lease with CPR Kingston LLC Bank for space to be used by the Board of Elections.
Move it.
Moved by Donaldson, second by Haynes. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 252, establishing Capital Project 572, the Wittenberg Road culvert in the town of Woodstock.
I'll move it.
Moved by Donaldson, second. Haynes? Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Okay. Resolution 254, authorizing the chair to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the town of Ulster for security services at the COVID-19 testing site.
Move it.
Moved by Donaldson, second by Gavaris. Legislator Gavaris.
Thank you. If one of the deputy execs could answer, why did we contract with Ulster PD to do security when don't we have sheriffs and we have staff at the jail that we've already been asking the question if they're underutilized? Why did we have to contract out?
Yeah, I mean, this was like, we've also paid overtime to the sheriff's department as well. This was a coordinated effort between the state police, town of Ulster police, and the sheriff's department. It required 24/7 security, and the only reason that we're actually paying the town of Ulster is to allow us to get reimbursed by FEMA to help them offset some of their costs. We will get 100% reimbursement on this, and so that's why this contract is coming now. But normally it's 75%, but because of so many donations, we got donations of over 100,000 from Save-On for the tents and other things, and we can use that towards our 25% cost. Instead of the town applying to FEMA separately, because this is about their only costs associated with COVID, this allows us to contract with them and use their services. And short answer is that we did use the sheriff's office and the state police, and it was a large effort to get security there.
So the sheriffs that work at the jail, they were utilized as well?
We used deputies. I don't know that it's in their union contract to become security officers. We left the security up to the sheriff as far as coordination on this.
I believe that the position of corrections officer in the sheriff's department is a whole different classification. I don't even know if they can carry firearms outside of the jail as part of
their
duties.
Can.
They can all
they
of them.
Can.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I got
a
question.
Legislator Donaldson.
Just as a point of information, actually, the
correction officers, if you note, there's been repeated states of emergency that have been declared by the county executive, and in that it points out that employees may be used in places that they may not normally be used in. That's part of the state of emergency. So I don't think they would be the correction officers would be prohibited from doing that even by union contract because of the state of emergency.
So just perhaps we should invite the sheriff to come and discuss that with us next week.
I mean, that's a point of, I mean, that you had, you know what the state of emergency was, right? You've read through those, so.
This is operations. I think it's a question to point towards law enforcement.
Would the committee like the sheriff to come next week and discuss it?
Legislator Cahill, I'll just hand up.
Legislator Cahill, sorry, you're on the second screen.
That's okay. Thank you. I know I'm not on this committee, but I just wanted to weigh in here. I think one of the things that we should consider is the town of Ulster has already expended this money with the impression that they were going to get it back. So I think at this point, you know, maybe going forward, we get in a situation like this, we look at all those things. But at this point, the town of Ulster has already spent that money with the agreement from the county that the county was going to reimburse them. Do I understand that correctly, Deputy Ryder?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, how do we approach that, right? You know, I think that, you know, representing the town of Ulster and property owner of town of Ulster, I certainly would like to see them get that money reimbursed that they were promised when they provided the security.
Legislator Gavaris?
Yeah, just to address Legislator Cahill, I didn't, if I implied that I was looking to not have that happen, then I apologize. I was more questioning it for future events so we don't have this thing happen if we don't have to. Have to, it's fine. But if we don't have to have it happen, I'd like to address it now so we understand for the future a better way of doing things, if we can. That's all.
Yeah, we don't have much choice in the matter, and we made the agreement. We have to follow through with it.
Any further discussion? All in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 255, authorizing conveyance of properties to the original owners.
Move it.
Moved by Donaldson, second by Haynes. On the resolution, any discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 256, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000, Prime Care Medical of New York. Moved.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second. Haynes.
Any discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 257 is approving a contract in excess of $50,000. Allison Krause, LMSW.
Okay. Moved.
Donaldson, second Haynes. On the resolution?
I have a question.
Oh, sorry. Eve?
So at the chair's meeting, it was not clear whether 70,000 was half of, like for halftime or full time. And it looks like it's now saying, so is it 140,000? Is this a full time position and it's being paid at 140,000 a year?
So the first, the prior term was from July of 19 till June of 30, and that was for 70,000.
20, you mean?
Of 20, sorry. The amendment is for the term of June 30th, 20, just to January 15th, 21, because of an uptick of usage. So it's a not to exceed, and it was being used more than it had in the past. So the not to exceed amount is the same, but it's for a shorter term.
So, sorry, just to clarify. So, but if you combine for the whole year, the not to exceed is 140,000? Is that, how many months is 140,000?
Going back to July 30th of 2019 to January 15th of 2021. So a year and a half, roughly. The $70,000 for the first agreement was for a year, and this $70,000 is for 6 months and 15 days. It carries you through till January 15th of 2021.
Okay, wait, I'm sorry. My math is slow. It's long, long evening. So the first $70,000 was for a year, and this $70,000 you said is for 6 months?
And 15 days, yep.
It's not to exceed $70,000.
I understand, but so $70,000 for 6 months, that's equivalent to $140,000 for a year, while last year it was $70,000 for a year. Is that correct, or am I misunderstanding?
Sure. I mean, it's a contract. It's not a, you know, you're saying a full-time position. It's for the usage. It's a not to exceed amount with rates. So the usage was higher than anticipated. So here we're carrying it out for just the next 6 months, 15 days. The rates have not changed. It's the not to exceed amount and the term that changed.
Any further questions? Any further comments on the resolution? All in favor? Opposed? Resolution 258, approving a contract in excess of $50,000 with NYSARC DBA, the ARC of Delaware County.
Move it.
Moved by Donaldson, second. Haynes. On the resolution, any discussion? All in favor? Opposed?
Aye.
Resolution 259, approving an excess contract in excess, a contract causing the aggregate contract plus the amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, Town and County Bridge and Rail Incorporated. Moved by Donaldson, second by Haynes. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 260, approving an execution of contract in excess of $50,000 by Duchess Overhead Doors Incorporated. Moved by Donaldson, second by Haynes. On the resolution, any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Resolution 261, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000, AccuCare Nursing and Home Care.
Okay.
Moved second. By Donaldson, second by Haynes. Any discussion, questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Resolution 262, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000, Metroland Business Machines Incorporated Purchasing.
Okay.
Moved by Donaldson, second by Haynes. On the resolution? Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, any new business? Any old business? All right. Thank you all for coming back. This time, I'll Legislator Donaldson.
Yeah, I'd like to figure out a time for the committee to discuss the transfer tax and look at your calendars and come up with some time, because I really think that should be something that is going to take a little bit of time, and rather than doing it at a regular meeting.
I agree. And in the meantime, I think that our legislative counsel Ragucci and minority counsel Pascal are going to need to get together on the legalities, because I think that they're a little farther apart than was evident here tonight on that. So
I don't think they're that far apart. I'm sorry. Motion to adjourn.
Moved by motion to adjourn by Donaldson. Second by Haynes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Have a great evening.
Good night.